Ah, this is so good. All right, friends.
We're going over it in a minute, so wait a bit.
No, no, that's the whole point. You're recording over it. Recording over the beginning. We've started, mate. We've begun. Cool. Friends, welcome to this week's Jack of All Graves. Right, so, bit of an interesting one this week, right? Bit of a different one. Bit of a long-promised and finally promise-fulfilled type of episode, right? So, firstly, Corrigan isn't here. She's fanning about in the city or whatever, going to see a play or something like that. You know, like she does, strutting about the place like she's a fucking, you know, giving it the big one. So I have taken the opportunity this week, friends, like I've been threatening for a long time now, and you don't know this, but we've spoken about this on the podcast for many, many, what feels like months. I've taken the opportunity this week to sit down with a guest, a very particular guest, a very special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, this week, joining me on JOAG, and this isn't going to be in a, you know, our usual 2 hours, I reckon, you know, I've got a conversation that I want to have here. But who I have sat across from me on the sofa here at Lewis Towers is none other than my fucking son, if you can believe that. Mm-hmm. Peter Lewis. Peter, I'd love you to say hello, please, to the thrice-blessed listeners of Jack of All Graves.
Hi, everyone. Seems like a lot of build-up for little old me, but we're going to have a lot of fun today.
So good.
Lots of matters to discuss.
Yes, we do. Peter, that's fantastic. It's a great start. Yes, much to discuss. So let's think how to kick this off. Pete, just talk to us a little bit about yourself. I'll give you a bit of a kind of a overview here, right? What I want to cover here during this conversation is... Mm-hmm. On JOAG, we talk a lot about the horrors, right?
Yeah.
Capital T, capital H. Not just movies, but the horrors of what Corey and I often refer to as the end times, right?
How messed up the world is.
Exactly this, mate. Exactly this.
Crazy things.
Crazy things, yeah. But I am always aware that Corrigan and I have a particular perspective on this being... Probably from your point of view, old, right?
Yeah, sure.
I'm 46,
mm-hmm.
And I have been your age.
Yeah,
right.
Long time ago now.
Long, thank you very much. Yes, of course. I have been your age, but not during this age. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
It's a lot different. Yeah.
Big time. So when I was you, the world was different.
Exactly.
Before we jump into, what you know, your experience of horror movies as a kid is, mm-hmm. I'd love to talk a little bit about what the experience of, and I say kid, please don't think that's condescending. I don't mean that in a condescending way. I'd love to talk a little bit about what the experience of being 14 is like in 2025. Okay. Let's start with school, right? A lot of our audience is in the Americans.
Yeah.
You know about them?
Yeah, Americans.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So a lot of them are in the Americans. Do me a favour, just describe for me what the experience is like of being in school at 14 in the year 2025 in the UK.
So I wake up in the morning, I go to school.
Yeah.
There's lots to think about what you're saying, because if you say the wrong thing, it can spiral pretty fast like that.
What, in school to your teachers or to your
friends?
Well,
a little bit of both. It can be on social media, other things like that. But you could say one thing, it gets taken out of context. So there's lots of thinking involved.
So do you,
in a school day.
Are you telling me that you almost have to play things out in your head before you say them?
Exactly. You've got to be premeditated in how you discuss and stuff like that.
So you plan your day out in your head?
Yeah, I do sometimes, yeah.
Okay. Talk to me about the kind of vibe in your lessons. Do your teachers give you... How do you feel they're setting you up for the future? That's what I'm getting at.
Well, the future's a big thing.
Yeah.
And hopefully there'll be lots of it, but
yeah,
the state the world is in, there might not be.
Yeah.
There's lots of, like, talking about how the world is now in things like English and other lessons like that. But there's, like, in history, my history's teacher always going on about how history's repeating itself and everything like that and how he notices patterns.
Yeah.
But there's not much prepping you for the future. It's all about telling you what not to do in the future.
I see.
But not what the world's going to be in the future, because no one knows.
Okay.
So it can be left...
That's
with, yeah.
fascinating to me, right? Again, and I'm not trying to sketch you out or crush you or anything like that, right? But a lot of what Corrigan and I talk about to our listeners week in, week out is about the path that we see the world on, right? Climate crisis.
Yeah.
AI and the social impact it's already having, the impact it's having on people's kind of capacity to, you know, come up with their own thoughts, to think for themselves, politics. Bottom line, and we might be wrong.
Yeah.
Bottom line, Corrigan and I worry that 50, 60, 70 years from now, the future is, the world is going to look very different to how it does now, and not in a good way.
Yeah.
Is that something that your teachers are talking about? Is that something that you're being prepared for?
Not in particular. There's lots of sort of everything's always changing and teachers are making that apparent to us, but not in a way that makes it sound worrying, because I guess they can't sit in their lessons and talk to us about how rubbish the world's going to turn out to
sure,
be.
Sure.
Their job is to give us, build us positivity.
Yeah.
To give us like skills for later life.
Yeah.
So they don't really give us the reality of it, I find.
I see.
It can be bubble wrapped to make us feel ready for the world, which is what they're trying to achieve,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really insightful. Mm. When it comes to this bubble wrapping, right, what do you think? And there's no wrong answers, right? I'm super curious.
Yeah.
What do you think being prepared for the world that you're growing up in means? So it's 2025 now, you're 14, let's say 15 years time, 2040, you'll be 30 years old. Quick maths! How do you see the world looking in 15 years time?
I think it's going to be a lot busier. Mm. There's always going to be way more people around as time goes on.
Yeah.
And I think it's escalating further.
Yeah.
But I think it is important now as well. I'm taking computer sciences for one of my GCSEs, and I think it's important to get involved in that early.
Yeah.
Because it will be a big part of the future, I can tell you that much.
Yeah.
So there's lots of, what's the word? I don't know. There's lots of, like, anticipation.
Sure.
To what the future's going to bring.
Yeah.
Good things, hopefully, but probably not.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to get into it early and make predictions in my head.
Okay.
So I think there's going to be lots of AI, probably lots more wars.
Yeah.
The way it's going, it's not looking positive with Trump and Putin and everything like that.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to prepare myself as much as I can.
Okay.
With what I'm choosing to do now in school.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
You mentioned right at the start there a few minutes back, you talked about social media and about how, you know, saying the wrong thing can have...
It can spiral.
Yeah, exactly. Give me an example of that. Do you use social media yourself yet?
Not the big social media platforms, but things like WhatsApp, etc.
Group chat.
Yeah. So you'll say one thing, and within like 20 minutes, it can be on like, my class has got a group chat, so it can end up on there. It can end up in many places.
Yeah.
So you've got to be careful who you can trust and who's just in it to become more popular. It's lots of like, it's a game.
Yeah, okay.
You've got to strategically, if you want to like climb the ranks and not be bullied as such.
Okay.
You can't see, but I did air quotes there. nice. If you don't want to be bullied, you've got to always be thinking about how you can level up, because everything's changing and it's always increasing.
So you're talking about status.
Yeah, there's lots of that.
How I guess, are you saying that that plays out in face-to-face life, in real life in school? Yeah. So what you've said on a group
chat. There's lots of fake,
sort
of false masks and stuff like that.
It's fascinating.
Difficult to know who to trust.
So talk to me a little bit more about the kind of the social element of school. Because, and again, not to want to be all like, in my day, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, you had particular groups of people in school. You know, you'd have sporty kids, you'd have, you know, your music kids, your theatre kids.
I think there's probably similar groups. There's obviously sporty kids. Football's a big thing now. If you do football,
yeah,
you're immediately welcomed into that community.
Yeah.
So that can be an easy way in, but I'm not the best at football.
Right, like your dad.
Yeah. So there's football. There's people who are on social media and trying to be more active on social media, but in different ways.
Right.
So you get people starting YouTube channels. They usually form clicks. I tried it. It wasn't my cup of tea. Right. The editing.
Yeah,
it was a bit
yeah.
too much.
Yeah.
If you want to do it, you have to properly do it. But there's lots of... There's the social media people who are still trying to be wholesome and do good.
Yeah.
And then there's sort of, what would you say, like jocks?
Yeah, I don't know, sure.
Who yeah. are... Yeah.
On we'll come back to that in a sec.
Mm.
Is and I'm doing the air quotes yeah. now myself, influencer, is that seen as a viable no. career pathway?
Not as much. That's more like 2017 through COVID.
Right.
It was getting bigger. But now it's sort of taken the mickey out of in school.
Right.
As in, like, if you're, like, really trying at, like, becoming a YouTuber and someone finds your YouTube channel...
I see.
It can be difficult to, like, play it off.
Right.
If it's obvious that you're putting a lot of work into it and yeah. you want to always seem...
Yeah.
Like, not to be, like, too, like, stressed out and... Like,
try hard.
Yeah. That's... Yeah. So you're always trying to be cool.
Casual.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. And so let's say, for example, I was in school and I was putting my heart and soul into my YouTube channel
mm-hmm.
and I was learning to edit mm-hmm. and I was shooting content mm-hmm. and I had all the gear.
Yeah.
And one of the twats found my channel.
Yeah.
What might that look like for me?
You'd probably be sat on the bench on your own for a couple of weeks.
Wow.
And it's difficult. It's not very nice.
Yeah.
But it's the reality of it.
Yeah.
Although there are some people form groups. People who are all interested in becoming that form groups.
Yeah.
So there's a couple who like do Minecraft and
yeah.
feature in each other's videos.
Yeah.
So they'll do like a series or something where they've made their own world and they're like together just having fun.
Yeah.
So that's... there's a wholesome side to it, but other people don't see the wholesome side.
They just see something to target.
Yeah, exactly. There's lots of that, which is why you've always got to be thinking ahead, is what I was saying earlier. You don't want to be a target.
Yeah. See, that none of that sounds massively different from the way I remember
yeah,
it.
It's just in different forms.
It's just in different
exactly.
forms. The format has changed.
Yeah.
So, you know, we would have kids who were super into sports mm-hmm. and who were, you know, going for medals and would do
yeah.
karate and
yeah.
whatever. And they were, you know, if you get called up in assembly to show off your medal,
yeah,
you're a target.
Exactly.
Ah, that's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
Mm.
So what are the, if you think about the kind of different cliques at school, you said obviously there's the sports, there's the media people,
yeah.
there's the, what are the other kinds of little kind of groupings of kids in school?
Yeah, so you've got drama club and music club and they're all always together. They keep themselves to themselves, sort of. They don't get targeted as much because they are having fun.
Yeah.
But they're doing it in their own way and people just sort of leave them to
leave
themselves.
Them to,
yeah, that's
yeah.
fair enough. But you get the drama and the music kids, they mix a lot. Drama club, as I said, they play lots of games and stuff like that. So they form quite tight relationships. But when something goes wrong in those relationships, it
yeah.
blows up.
Okay.
So it catches pretty fast.
Yeah.
So there's sport jock people. They're not trying to like be like the best at sports, but they use sports as a shield, I think.
I see.
I can't, without causing too much.
No, I listen.
Yeah,
I
don't want
to incriminate yourself.
Yeah,
absolutely
but,
not.
But in my eyes, they use it as sort of a shield.
Yeah.
And just want to blend in, and everyone does.
Yeah.
So I'm not having a go at them at all.
No, of course.
I just, sometimes it can be a bit cowardly.
Well, there's that saying, isn't there, that some people make their hobby their personality.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's difficult.
Exactly. I think that's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Now, again, not wanting to drag you down or put you
yeah,
in
yeah.
therapy or anything like that, but speaking personally and maybe thinking a little bit about your school group and your friendship group
yeah.
and that, I asked you to kind of think about it in the next 15, 20 odd years. What are your worries about the world as you see it and the direction the world is going? What is it that if I were to ask you to just name one or two things that you think are going to become problems for us in your lifetime, what would you say?
It's all about how false news spreads quickly and how AI is getting better at creating that.
Yeah.
But it's going to eventually, it'll be easily able to involve things like parliament, presidents saying things that they've not said.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a big thing, I think. Deep fakes, etc. Yeah. That's all growing. There was the thing the Queen did. Yeah. But you know what I mean.
I do know exactly. Yeah. What, the dance on...
Yeah,
on,
that's the one. Yeah,
of course, of course.
We had that in an ICT lesson not long ago.
Oh, so that is something that is being...
Yeah, sort of. But, like, two lessons in a year will be on, like, AI and how it's growing.
Yeah.
And it's trying... ICT is more trying to teach us how to build the AI, not protect yourselves against it.
I see.
Which can be problematic. Because if you've got more people who know how to do it, but they're not educating people on how to protect themselves against it, all you're building is criminals and
quite right.
Weak victims.
Again, not wanting to leave yourself vulnerable or incriminate anyone like that, but do you see people in your peer group using AI for homework and tasks and things like that?
People can be using ChatGPT, and I have noticed, I'm not going to name names.
No, of course.
But teachers' PowerPoints are also in the form of GPT, and it's quite poorly done because even I can notice it, and I've not used GPT.
This is interesting.
But sometimes it will blip, and you can tell it's not a person that's written that.
What are the things that give it away to you?
Like, if a teacher... It might not be GPT as such, ChatGPT, but the form of AI, because, like, the way that ChatGPT gives you the stuff, it's got, like, headers and, like, emojis, and then,
You
get that lots in slides, and it's like, hang on a minute, if I typed in, write me a lesson, it would come up like
it
that.
It would have, like, a title involved, then some emojis.
Exactly. And it's like, you've not even tried. So sometimes it gets too easy.
Wow.
And people will... take advantage of it, and people are getting stupider. Without being, like, mean, people are getting stupider, and they're just blindly following AI at this point.
Right. Have we talked about this before, you and I? Have we talked about this? Because you're right.
Yeah.
Right? Have you heard of MIT? It's a university in America.
Yeah,
It's Massachusetts Institute of Technology or Michigan, one or the other.
Yeah.
One of the M's.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They released a study, like, in the last couple of days that looked at, you know, the first kind of few months of ChatGPT use and what it's doing to people who use it to get information served to them.
Yeah.
As opposed to finding the info for themselves.
And that's an important skill.
Vital. Yeah. Absolutely vital skill. And it is having an impact on people's neural, you know, their cognitive capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and... educators say, like Ian Glallen's a teacher. If your teacher is using GPT to write your work, and you're answering it using GPT, then who's learning anything?
No one. It's all just,
you know,
AI. AI is building itself without realizing it.
That's a very interesting point. It's a very interesting point. I'm really glad. I'm really kind of low key proud that you see that.
Yeah.
Fascinating stuff. Any others? Anything else that gives you the kind of, hang on, this ain't cool, about the next, say, 20 years?
Just people in general, as they're finding embarrassing things more amusing and stuff like that, like immaturity.
Yeah.
And stuff like that is getting quicker as well, like children's access to the internet.
Yes.
And stuff like that is starting to get worrying. Is worrying.
Yeah.
So that's a dangerous thing. It's a dangerous game because it's difficult to enforce as well, I find.
Yeah. Give me a bit more on that. When you say kids accessing the internet, embarrassing stuff, what do you mean?
Well,
be as specific.
Phones, you can lie about your age on a phone and it can't really tell you, it can't verify that in any way other than...
Trust me, bro.
Giving, yeah, exactly. So it can be difficult. Like, movies on Netflix that kids shouldn't be accessing.
Right.
They can get things like that. Websites.
Yeah, I follow you.
Yeah, so it's shady because there's a way to access it that shouldn't be there, but there's not much that can be done about it. So something needs to be done about that because it is...
Not to want to put words in your mouth, but it feels to me as though you're saying kids are, or, you know, people of your age, maybe younger, maybe a bit older, able to access content meant for adults without developing the skills of an adult.
They've not got the thing there to stop them from doing it.
No checks, no. Kind of, you know, processes in place. Yeah, fascinating. I hear you loud and clear. And speaking of age-inappropriate content, right? You will know that another big part of Jack of All Graves, a big part of my life, is horror, right?
Yeah.
Horror small age, horror movies.
Yeah.
And it's often said, I mean, I've tried to kind of check in with myself at the right speed to introduce you to horror movies and whether indeed to introduce you to horror movies at all. Because they're such an important part of my life and I've spoken on the podcast loads of times about the thrill I get. I mean, you see it in me. I mean, when I sit down and watch a movie with you and Owen, a movie that I love.
You get excited. It is. You do.
I love it. There's nothing I love more.
Exactly.
So I've been trying to kind of fold you into horror movies a little bit at a time, a little bit reluctantly.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be the case, speaking as your parent, it used to be the case that you couldn't handle any kind of visual horror at all. Talk to us about that.
I used to be a lot weaker as a person.
Interesting.
But as I've grown up, I think I'm quite good at getting... sort of standing back and taking a look at a situation and being like, whoa.
Yeah.
But I'm getting better at filtering it for myself. And I think that's a skill that lots of people need to develop and not many people have in youngsters my age. But there's also lots of talk about, oh, can kids handle horror movies?
Yeah.
I think if kids are hearing the adults panic, they will panic. So mollycoddling, etc., if that adult's going, oh, it might be too much for them, it's really scary, kids are going to watch it and go, oh, it's too much for me, it's really scary.
So true. I completely agree.
Yeah.
The way I often describe it is if you ever see a kid, like, falling down or banging his head, the first thing it'll do is it'll look at a parent. And if the parent goes, oh, shit, then they'll start to cry. Yeah. But if the parent is like,
walk it off. That's the one. As I've heard many times.
Walk it off.
Including the time I dislocated my wrist.
Yeah, you did. You did. You banged yourself up. But I walk it off was halfway up my mouth and then we realised that your arm was all funny looking. This is fascinating stuff. You talked about this ability to filter. So when you're watching a scary movie, and I know you've started doing this independently now, you've watched a few on Netflix. Yeah. When you see something maybe gory or shocking or scary or whatever, what does that filter look like in your mind? What are you doing internally?
Yeah, interesting. I immediately go to and find fascinating, how have they produced this? Is it CGI? Is it really good prop making? I find that side really interesting.
Yeah.
How could I, if I did it, is there another way I could have done it? Could I have made it more scary?
Yeah.
But I think that's a big thing with CGI. Music as well, I do find that side interesting.
That's good.
Because in music, we've been doing a film music topic. Yeah. And it was really interesting. We were shown a clip with different music each time. Same clip, different music.
Oh,
and
wow.
It was wild. It was completely different.
Wow.
It had people laughing and quiet in like sadness. So it's really interesting how music and CGI and everything can change what you're actually watching.
Yeah,
and that's really interesting.
What it feels like you're saying is that if you look at something gory or scary happening in a movie and you realize that somebody is off camera filming that,
something behind the scenes,
exactly, or there's somebody with a makeup brush just touching up the blood, then it takes the you're almost defanging the snake, aren't you? You're almost taking the poison out of it.
It's looking at it from a far point of view, which I said, which I'm quite, yeah.
Very nice. Very insightful. Very insightful, Peter. Oh, very you, insightful.
I do try.
It's very warm here, listeners, right here in the UK. And just to add a bit of context, I've got sweaty knee, pits.
You're just feeling that, yeah.
Sweaty knee pits. Can I ask, and I'm preparing myself for a disappointing answer here.
Okay.
When I think back to my school days, movies were big. Movies were super popular amongst my peer group, right? I was part of like a friend group who was super into horror movies. Horror movies, a lot of them were banned in those days, and you had to kind of copied VHS tapes and whatever. Is there much of a movie culture in school right now?
So movies as a whole, Marvel's a big thing in school, sort of.
Yeah.
Horror movies less so.
Okay.
But I'm not sure if that's because all the greats are from when you were young.
Yeah.
So everyone was talking about them, and that as kids you've gone, oh, we should definitely watch this. We should get on the bandwagon.
Yeah.
This is going to be great.
Yeah.
But now, as movies themselves have been, parents, like I was saying earlier, are more like, oh, should we let them watch this?
Yeah.
It makes us sort of nervous as well.
Yeah.
So there's less movies. We're less excited to watch a movie.
Yeah.
When we've heard other people like, oh, it's not great.
Yeah.
And so newer movies, whenever I hear you or someone else really enjoy a movie, it makes me want to watch it more.
Yes.
But lots of the movies I hear people rave about are from when 80s, 90s, that kind of era.
Interesting, very interesting.
But I don't know if it's because they make movies less because people stop watching them, or people stop watching them because they make movies less. So it's very interconnected and confusing there.
Yeah. What I think also plays a part in this is, in school for me, you would only have other people's word of mouth.
Yeah.
So if somebody hands you a tape and goes, you've got to watch this, it's brilliant, immediately
you watch it.
Whereas now, scroll.
Let me check, is this actually good?
Exactly. It takes maybe some of the mystique out of it, some of the anticipation out of it, perhaps.
And as faster-paced content comes along, we're less good at watching movies as a species.
Listen, I agree. So, okay, this leads me to ask. So when you watch movies, which you do in your room with us on Netflix, do you watch movies with your phone in one hand, watching the screen with one hand and your phone in the other hand?
Lots of the time I do find myself doing that, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll have my messages open, or I'll be on TikTok, YouTube Shorts at the same time, and it's difficult to focus. But that's not my fault. I think as we're, not to sound like, oh, I'm innocent.
Sure.
As humanity goes, it's the standard. It's, we have to be plugged in all the time, because we might miss something, and you have to always be on top of everything, on top of the new thing to survive.
And do you feel pressured almost? Not to want to put words in your mouth, but let's say, for example, I challenged you to completely step away from WhatsApp, from YouTube, from any kind of social media for, say, a day. What would it feel like on the other side of that day?
Lots of quick reading or messages, catching everything up. You have to always catch up.
Yeah.
And you notice that the people at the front of the wave as such are surfing it better. Yeah. I just made that up, but that's a pretty good analogy.
It is. No,
you don't want to be drowning, you want to be surfing.
Yeah, you want to be across it all.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Listen, this is super insightful. Mm-hmm. So, listen, back to movies. You're growing up in a house with movies on all the time. I've always got a movie on the go. Yeah, I'm always talking about movies, writing about movies, thinking about movies, recommending movies. Yeah. What are the kinds of things that you enjoy watching? If you've got a bit of time to yourself and you think, right, it's the movie time, what will you reach for?
I'm enjoying the true crime documentaries at the minute.
Yes, you are.
I am, in fact, halfway through Gabby Petito. It's about like an abusive relationship and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's quite interesting. But looking at, like, horror and the people that do things, what are they thinking? That really,
yeah.
I find turning to that more.
See, because a few weeks back when you came downstairs and said that you'd binge-watched Fred and Rose West on Netflix, I was astounded. I was proper stunned.
I think probably Mum was a bit...
She was, I could tell you that she was. What did... Talk to me about your thought process as you were watching that then. What is it? Because you are, I can see you're developing a kind of a taste for true crime. What is it that appeals to you about that kind of documentary?
To me, it seems quite far away, so I struggle to be like...
What, in terms of distance, time?
Sort of just another place, another reality.
Yeah.
But I know it's actually happened, so that sort of freaks me out.
Yeah.
But in a way that I feel... like, that's really interesting and I don't need to worry about it, so I can dissect it more and I can spend more time on it because it's further away from me.
Yes.
So I find that really interesting, the psychological point of view. I'd quite like to get into that when I'm older.
Yeah.
But that side of things is really appealing to me.
Yeah.
In a way that where I am now, I feel safe and in a bubble, so I can look at where's not safe.
Sure.
And... dissect it.
Yeah, almost a degree of distance. You can be clinical about it. Ah, that's interesting. I don't think, because Fred and Rose were in my lifetime. I think I was probably a little bit older than you when it happened. I think I was like maybe 18, 19 when it happened, maybe a bit older. I'm trying to, have there been any kind of big true crime cases like that in your lifetime, I wonder?
Not as much. And it's really interesting as well, because as I feel like police are getting better at catching things like that sooner, preventing it.
Yeah, maybe.
Possibly. So I'm wondering if because that could be another reason why I'm feeling safer and more comfortable. I think society in that sense is improving.
Yes.
In the fact that physical violence happens less. But cyberbullying, mental, it's becoming a bigger thing. So I think it's pivoting.
Yeah, I think, do you know, without checking stats, I instinctively I feel that you're right in that. How often do you get a punch up in school? How often is it a fight?
Do you know what? There can be, but it's among the older years.
Right.
I think the COVID generation hides behind screens more and isn't as good at confronting people, problems. They'll go home and try and sort it out behind a screen, and that's not great. That's not a good coping mechanism. Oh, I'll sort it out later.
Damn, this is fascinating.
Yeah.
So do you feel that in yourself or not? Are you somebody who will... you know, be pragmatic and will face something face on, or will you talk about it in a group chat? Or
I think I sort of do both, because I'm not the best at communication, and I know that, and I am improving it.
You're doing great on this, by the way. You're doing great here.
Thanks. But I am trying to get better at that. So in my head, I'm like, I could go home and just sort this on WhatsApp, but that's not the right thing. That's not the way that I should be doing it.
Yeah, sure.
So I'm trying. It is difficult, but I'm trying. I'm not sure other people haven't noticed a problem yet.
Yeah. Because they're in it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they can be enclosed in it.
Yeah.
So it's...
Listen, I think you used the term bubble wrapped.
Yeah.
If you're in a problem, then you don't necessarily see that it is a problem. Yeah. Yeah, again, really interesting. Sorry, we've gone down a rabbit hole, which we often do on this podcast. Back to the movies. Now, I remember one thing you're great at, so is your brother, actually, of 11, but one thing you're great at is binging a series, right?
Yeah, I do like...
You do. When you get a taste for a series, you will rip through it.
Yeah.
And over the last year, you and I sat down and went through all of the Scream series.
I loved that.
End to end. I loved it as well. It's a series that I sort of thought I didn't enjoy as much as I did when I sat down and watched it with you. I loved it. Mm. That, whether you know it or not, that's a big part of a genre called the slasher genre, right?
Yeah.
So-called because you've got cast of characters, and you've got one villain, you've got the horror villain who slashes his way through the entire cast, right? Okay. A single killer. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about your reactions to that series then. What did you enjoy about it? What made you so keen to watch them as quickly as we did?
Because they've been talked about so much, that was a big... That got me onto it.
Yeah.
And then as I was going, I was like, yeah. It's because... In a way, they are quite fast-paced slashers.
Oh, yeah,
they go through the people quick.
Scream in particular, it is, yeah. It doesn't stop.
And that's really fun, and it's engaging. And again, looking at them like decapitations. It's all like, how have they done that? Is that all CGI?
Yes,
mate. It's interesting.
Yeah.
And every new movie, they've got a top and they've got to do a cooler kill.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you've got to keep going. Like, how much more can they do?
Yeah.
And that keeps viewers coming back, and that keeps me coming back in particular.
Yes.
Because I love the building on it and the how much further, what more can they actually do?
Yes.
And that intrigues me.
Ah, it's lovely to hear.
Because it's got to go somewhere.
Yeah.
So I want to see where it goes.
You want to see what they can pull out of the bag next, yeah. how they can outdo the last kill.
And that keeps me going quicker and quicker. So I'm like, they can't get better, they can't get better, they can't get better.
Yeah.
But they do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I might have said to you at the time, but I tried my best not to bang on about it, because, shut up, Dad. But what the Scream movies are famous for is being movies about movies.
Yeah,
you know?
You did talk about that, yeah.
You know, there are loads of slasher films that came before Scream, and Scream is almost a movie about those movies as much as it's a movie in itself. Yeah. It does the same tricks as the old movies. Exactly, it comments on them. What did you notice about the series as it went on? Because you said that every movie is different to the last in a way. What did you notice about the series as it progressed?
So, I think as it went on, it knew itself. It made jokes about itself in bits.
Yeah.
I think in the last one, or the penultimate one, where Jenna Ortega's sat there watching Stab, is it?
That's
in
it.
In the movie that they make about the movie, and it's all... So as it goes, there's more that it can take the mickey out of.
Sure.
I think is lots of it. Like, at the start, I didn't really get the references, because it's other movies that I've not done yet that I will do.
Yeah.
And as they go... They started commenting on themselves more, and I understood it more.
Yes.
So I found that as it went, it was becoming more, haha, watch this, I can do more than you, poke, poke, poke.
And the more you learn, I guess, the more you get out of it, because you get what the jokes are.
Exactly, and very that's nice. A big thing.
Very nice.
So I might go back to it after watching other things and just love it even more.
Which is, of course, music to my ears.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you stand on jump scares versus gore versus tension versus, you know, creepy scares? What are the types of scares in a horror movie that you enjoy the most?
They've all got to tie together to make the best scare, which is just, like, perplexed, like, ah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, something's going to get me in real life. They've got to be slightly realistic. Although I think I find zombies the scariest.
Really?
And I don't know if that's because they look messed up.
Yeah.
But it's thinking, like, serial killers, they've happened. We can deal with them.
Yep.
Zombies, that's never happened before. If that happens, and the zombie movies tell us how the apocalypse started.
Yes, they do.
And that's like, if something like that happens, we've got nothing.
Yeah. What I love about zombie movies, what I love about zombies as a threat, is that if there's just one of them, you can run around it.
Mm-hmm.
But they come in herds, you know?
Yeah.
People, you know, think of all the people who have died. Infection. They're all coming back for you.
Yeah.
That's what I love about zombies. You can take them on one, but you know, that's never where it ends. Yeah. Fascinating. So I know that you used to react badly to gore. Does gore affect you anymore? I know you've seen plenty of
Not as much. What I was saying, now I'm looking at it, how did they do it?
From a technical point of view.
I did used to be quite timid, and I do find myself... Things that I used to find scary, I'm still scared of them, but because I know what they did to me in the past.
Sure, yeah.
So I'm worried they'll do it again.
Yeah.
But I think if I... the Green Lantern movie used to absolutely terrify me. It did.
Oh, listen, everybody has something from their past that would shit them right
and
up.
And I locked it away and I've never been back since.
Yeah, what was it about Green Lantern? Was it the baddie? Was it the guy with the big head?
Massive head and he's got like tentacles behind
him. That's right.
And there's the one Doctor Who episode with the wooden lady.
Oh, I've told that story on the cast before.
That's like 2 weeks.
I felt like the shittest parent around showing you that. The one time I think I know people enjoy Doctor Who and it was the scariest episode they've ever done. You nearly broke my hand by squeezing it so tight.
Yeah, and I was like a 7 year old.
You were, yeah.
And I was hurting you. That's how you know.
Yeah. And you didn't sleep for a week
afterwards,
literally.
And I've been back since and I've watched all the Doctor Who's and I got to that episode and the anticipation did really scare me.
Yeah.
Is it David Suchet?
It is David Suchet.
Yeah,
yes.
He's looking at him.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, that's the scary guy.
Yeah.
And as I'm going, I'm like, it's going to happen again, it's going to happen again. And it doesn't happen again.
You're almost scared of the fear of fear.
Exactly.
Rather than the event itself.
And it's crazy. It's messed up. You scare yourself more than the movie scares you.
So it feels like what you're saying then is, if a movie is going to be truly scary, it's almost got to make you scared of what's coming up.
Yeah. It's the tension, the suspense, the music, and then they'll cut the music, and then you'll be like, oh, and then it'll go again.
Yeah.
But it keeps, the fear of itself is big.
That's fascinating. Yeah. Listen, again, this is so much more insightful than I was expecting. You're almost scared of what you think might occur.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. You've also binged Fear Street lately. What are your thoughts on that?
Fear Street is quite different in the fact that especially the last one is on its own.
Yeah.
That was less
engaging. I hated the last one. Corey and I both thought it was
Yeah.
Shite.
But as you go, it builds on itself again. And that's sequels I really enjoy.
Yeah.
Looking, especially at the first one, you can see where directors knew they were going to make a sequel and they've hinted.
Yeah.
But you've got no idea.
Yeah.
And then you watch a second one and you're like, oh my God, that's so clever.
Yeah.
And as it goes, it's really fun. Fear Street in particular, I did enjoy. The one where they did the flashback.
Yeah. Oh, me too.
Because that was great. Because they could... It sounds really stupid, but you've seen it. And then after they'd done it, they could be even more clever because it's already happened.
You
could
almost
flashback.
Give it a different perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you can't look at it like you do a sequel because it's a prequel. But you look at it, and if it was the first one, that would be the hint that you didn't get that you loved.
Right.
And it sounds stupid because they've made the hint after, but you still loved it just as much.
Listen, I hear you loud and clear. It's, you know, when, and I don't know if you know this or not, but those three movies were made, like, bang, bang, bang. They were made in one go.
I'm not.
So the filmmakers kind of knew what they could put in.
And
if you take something like Scream, for example... Mm. In the first Scream, they had no idea they were going to make eight of these things, you know? But with Fear Street, they knew that they had these three that they could make one after another, so they could almost trust the audiences would be around for all three, you know? So really cool. If it's sequels you love and long stories that you love, horror is the genre for you.
Yeah,
I mean, there
exactly.
are so many
it's
different
great.
Long, long, long chapters.
Yeah.
Listen, listeners, friends, the thrice blessed, you've all got to know Peter a little bit over the last kind of 40-odd minutes. If you have any recs, any maybe left or middle column recs, by that, by the way, Pete, I mean, Corey and I, Joag's been going for almost 5 years now. And in the early days, we kind of split loads of horror movies into left, middle and right column. So left is good intro horror movies.
Yeah.
Think like Beetlejuice, Gremlins. Mm-hmm. Middle column is a little bit more intense, but still a good time.
Yeah,
and then on the right column, you've got like stuff that's going to mess you up, damage you. I'll save those for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
Yet.
Okay.
But listeners, if you've got any middle or left column recs, maybe that you think Pete might enjoy based on how we've got to know him a little bit more in this episode, shoot them our way. And if you enjoyed that, good God, I did. I'm sure you would all join me in thanking Peter Stuart Lewis, my boy of 14, for joining us here and for picking up the slack while Corrigan's away. And anything else you want to say, Peter? Anything you want to say to the listeners of the multi-million fucking strong Joag army out there?
Yeah. I don't think there's much more I want to add. Just thanks for listening to me.
Yeah.
And I, the joy that you bring my father, he's always going down this rabbit hole of how interested he is and how he loves talking, and this podcast helps him talk.
Yeah.
Thanks for that.
It's an outlet.
Not much more, yeah.
Okay. Well, if there is any one more thing you'd like to say, Peter, then maybe it is.
Goodbye.
Say stay spooky.
Stay spooky.
Yes! Cheers, crew.